Chapter 6. It is not easy to sneak away from your own command. It took a bit of doing, in fact. She considered faking an illness, but these days, with all eyes on her as the identified leader of the Galactic Empire, the barest sniffle will have her swarming in nurse droids and health technicians. Instead, Ray Sloane's ruse went like this. She used her already overburdened schedule as an advantage. She told Ferrick Obdur that she had to take time to talk about fleet movements with Vice Admiral Galen, which was true enough. Galen's been asking for a meeting to discuss just that for days, no, weeks now. She sent word ahead to Galen's office that she couldn't meet today because she had a meeting with General DeVores to discuss troop movements. That would incite the ire of Galen, but the man would take it in stride. He would swallow his impatience and toe the line as he always had. To DeVores, she sent word that she wanted a meeting, but had to take time out to meet with Ferrick Obdur in propaganda. And so the triangle of deception was arranged. 3 points, one leading to the other. Unless someone was truly diligent about checking her whereabouts, it would seem from each to each that she had to move one meeting in favor of another. Few would seek to disturb her, lest they incite her ire. And Sloane was known for not taking that in stride. She did not toe any line. These days, she was the line, and none dared cross her. None except their mysterious fleet admiral, of course. The next step of her ruse required Adia's help. Sloane couldn't just hop into a craft and take off for regions unknown. She ran a tight ship. Accountability was king. A single ship gone missing was a breach of bureaucratic structure. And bureaucracy, vile as many considered it, was the foundation on which the entire galaxy was built. Bureaucracy would save them all. Violating that bureaucracy would upset the checks and balances. Unless, of course, Sloane had Adia change the designation and destination of a small supply ship. And so, an Imperial Lambda-class shuttle scheduled for Questel got rerouted instead to bring a load of Namite batteries and transponder arrays to the throne world of Coruscant. The pilot, a young recruit named Dasha Bowen, or so the registry says. Really, it's just a watertight identity, also put together by Adia.
Imperial Shuttle CS-831, Sloane says into the comm. This is transport pilot Dasha Bowen, transmitting clearance code and credentials now.
Ahead, Coruscant glows brightly. A massive world carved with lines of light. The geometric patterns of its planet-encompassing Ecumenopolis giving it the look of being on the edge of breaking apart, as if a frozen moment in time captures it seconds before it glows, swells, and detonates.
That may be truer than I care to admit, she thinks.
The throne world of the Empire is in the midst of being pulled apart. Not so dramatically as having its mantle shattered, no, but its populace is undergoing that kind of tectonic shift. The citizens in some sectors have risen up against the Empire, while others have instead fought against their insurgent neighbors. A veritable civil war. One whose flames are stoked nicely by the New Republic resistance fighters entrenched on the surface. They sow distrust. Chaos is the result. All around her little cargo ship, a defensive armada forms a protective shield around the planet. These are ISB ships, Imperial Security Bureau, not the Navy. Admiral Rax was very clear on that point. He said that they were not to commit resources protecting the throne world. The ISB is controlling this world, and the Navy doesn't want any part of it. It shows the fractures in the Empire. All the broken pieces drifting apart.
It is a symbol, he told her, of our indolence and torpidity. It is the moldering core of our overripe fruit, and I wish to cut away such rot so as to preserve our sweet remains, and, of course, the seeds within. She argued that saving Coruscant would be a better symbol. He answered with, "It is a far greater consequence to show how much we are willing to lose to preserve the strength of our empire." It was then that he echoed the words of Count Vidian. "Forget the old way." Was this echo deliberate? How would he know what Vidian told her? "We must discard the obvious choices, Admiral Sloane. We must forge our own path through the stars, if we are to survive." And with that, the argument was done. Now she hovers above the world, a world they have willfully forgotten. One left the ISB, under the command of Palpatine's old administrator, Grand Vizier Mas Amida. She wonders idly what it would take to retake the planet. The New Republic could fairly easily wipe out the ISB's defensive blockade. It would take time, but reports arrive daily of the Republic's growing military might. Still, the Empire's presence here on the surface is deeply dug in. An aerial campaign wouldn't be enough. Finally, her comm crackles, and a response returns.
"Code checks out. Cleared for landing, CS-831.
Of course it does, she thinks.
Adia knows what she's doing. Dasha Bowen sets the ship for a landing trajectory.
Sloane leaves the cargo ship behind on the landing platform. Droids move to unload the very real technical parts from inside its hold. While they are occupied, she pulls her visor low. The visor both hides her face and, with the tap of a button on the side of the helmet, pulls up a heads-up display, glowing on the plastoglass shield. In this case, it's a map of Coruscant. Her destination is a pulsing red star on the map, the old Hall of Imperial Register building, less affectionately known as the Pit. It is a storehouse of deeds, records, and data dumps. It is to most a worthless aggregation of the Empire's bureaucracy. As records pile up in ships and transports and nav computers across offices and academies and depots, those records must occasionally be offloaded to backup. And so they are dumped here, off-site, often by a droid. Few care to come here, for combing through the information is an act not unlike trying to find one particular grain of sand on a windswept beach. Worse, the information is often quite valueless. Trajectory calculations, inventory lists, personnel records all fill the massive warehouse of data. But it's that last bit she's looking for. Personnel records. If there's anything about Gallius Rax, it will be here. That is, if she can find it. Thankfully, Sloane is quite adept at navigating this place. To others, it is a pit. To her, it is a temple. The pit sits at the margins of the Verity District, a well-fortified imperial part of Coruscant, home to the Hall of Adjudication, the Institute to Preserve Imperial History, and the ISB Academy and offices. The streets here are usually clean, well-kept, and busy. But now, not so much. She passes a pair of stormtroopers sitting against a steel barricade, helmets off their heads and held between their legs. The two men are sweaty, tired, and staring off at nothing. Ahead, the street is scarred with starburst streaks of char. The plasticrete shattered and cracked as if by thermal detonator. It's quiet, too. Usually she'd hear the thrumming, vibrant traffic of the city above her. Speeders and grav bikes whipping past in crisscrossing lines like little myrmidons serving their colony. Now, though, the sky above is dead. Not a single speeder. No droids, no birds, nothing. The airspace is closed, isn't it? She'd heard reports of citizens loading up their speeders with explosives and driving them into Imperial buildings. Then, as if on cue, the ground shudders. Somewhere off in the distance,
just such an explosion. She can feel it vibrate up through her heels, all the way into her teeth. Sloane can't see anything, but it isn't long before she sees the trail of red smoke climbing into the sky like a crawling serpent. Klaxons go off. A pair of ISB speeders streak overhead. What a horror show, she thinks. But Ray has no time to dwell on this. Her time here is limited, and she has to move. The pit is ahead. From the surface, it looks like nothing but a single-story fortified bunker. It has a single door and a shuttered window. As Sloane approaches, the shutter slides up with a rattle-bang. There stands the top half of an administrative droid, its capsule-shaped head leaning forward. From its mouthpiece comes a tinny, mechanized voice.
Hold still for ocular scan.
Sloane can't hide from this. No matter how well-crafted the persona of Dasha Bowen, Adia's efforts do not carry as far as creating a whole new pair of eyeballs. This one will not be faked, and so she lifts her visor. From the droid's own eye comes a shimmering red beam. She blinks and winces as it passes over her face.
Grand Admiral Ray Sloane, it is good to see you. Welcome to the Hall of Imperial Register. Please watch your step. The fall is quite steep.
The droid is right. The pit is 50 floors. Not straight up, but rather straight down. Plunged into the exomantle of Coruscant like a pneumatic bolt. The shape of it is circular, and it spirals ineluctably downward, giving Sloane the sense that she is swirling down the drain. At the bottom, she half expects that the Hall of Imperial Register gobbles you right up like a mouth. A sarlacc nesting at the nadir, digesting wayward data miners. She will not be digested. Not today. She will, however, go mad if she doesn't get moving. Inertia is a curse, and Sloane's whole life and career have been about combating it. So she sets up shop in a little alcove. Hours pass. The droid attendants, more administrative droids, these fixed to the railings so that they can zip past the shelves of records, both hard copy and digital, bring her old data cartridges. She told them that she needed a proper accounting of all the ships of the Imperial Navy in play as of the destruction of the second Death Star. She's on her eighth and final cartridge. She starts with the Dreadnoughts, the Super Star Destroyers. 13 were in service before the revivified Death Star was destroyed above Endor. One of those is the Ravager, the SSD from which Sloane rules the Empire, and which, strictly speaking, is now Galen's command. One of those is the Executor, Vader's command ship. The Executor was lost that day, plunging into the surface of the Death Star, taking hundreds of thousands of the best Imperials with it. Sloane shudders as she thinks of it. That leaves 11 others. 3 are now in the hands of the New Republic. 2 of those were from admirals willingly surrendering the ship and its people. 1 was taken forcibly by New Republic forces while it underwent repairs over Kuat. 5 were destroyed outright in battles across the galaxy with the New Republic. The ships were understaffed, underprotected, and on the run. The Dreadnoughts are home to massive batteries of fleet-killing weapons, yes, but are also slow, unwieldy beasts. They hang there in the sky like bricks. And without adequate protection, it is an inevitability that enemy forces could erode the ships until obliteration ensues. 1 was taken by pirates. The Annihilator. Tag's old ship. But who controls the Annihilator now? The reports don't say. Another, the Arbitrator, made a bad hyperspace calculation to escape pursuing NR ships. It evaporated when it was sucked into a gravity well. That leaves Palpatine's own command ship, the Eclipse. Records show that it, too, was destroyed by a fleet of New Republic vessels. Akbar's own frigate, Home One, firing the ship-killing shot. Ah, but there's the catch. And it's why Sloane is here. The ships dumped data across the stars, transmitting pulses of information to this location. That provides a black box recording of information, so one could discern what exactly happened before a ship was destroyed, captured, or surrendered. All the other tracking data adds up to the known fates of each SSD. Their stories match the data for all of them, except one. For the Eclipse, the data ends a full day cycle before the ship was reportedly destroyed. It shows no siege by New Republic forces. It simply drops off the star map. Gone. Vanished. Sloan concedes that it's possible the ship stopped reporting due to a malfunction in its data recorder, though redundant systems were supposed to alert command if that had happened. Again, bureaucracy and reiterative mechanisms should have saved the day here. And yet they didn't. Is it possible that the Eclipse is still out there? Could the Ravager not be the last Super Star Destroyer in the naval arsenal? The inventory of the Star Destroyers is similar, but on a far grander scale. 75% of the Star Destroyers in service before Endor can capably be tracked to similar fates. Destroyed, captured, lost in confirmable if curious ways. But a full quarter of those ships cannot be accounted for. Records show fateful ends that contradict their black box recordings. Does the Empire have more ships than she knows? Ghost fleets out there somewhere? Are they operating independently? Have they been captured or abandoned? Something else may be going on. Does Rax know? Or is he in the dark too? Speaking of Gallius Rax, picking through the data to find anything on the erstwhile fleet admiral will be an act of finding a precious gem in a box of broken glass. It will be a slow and miserable retrieval. But it's why she's really here. So she summons a droid and sets it to work.
I will see what data I can excavate,
the droid says, then gives a small nod before its servo motors whir and carry it away.
Excavate, she thinks.
A perfect word, and from a droid no less. Flip, flip, flip. Page after page on the cartridge reader. She palms the control orb and swipes it left again and again, scrolling through endless administrative pages. Here, as with the Naval Archives, the presence of Rax is naught but a vapor trail. She's chasing shadows. And so she's down to searching the records of those who associated with him. Ilaren, Rancid, Screed, and Palpatine himself. She cross-references personnel reports, genealogical records, inventory lists, anything, everything. Hours pass. Her eyes are bleary. She feels alone and overwhelmed, and the only sound that accompanies her frustration and her anxiety is the sound of droids clicking and clacking and rattling about. She stands up. The search is over. Rax barely exists. Trying to figure out who he is or who he was is an act of grabbing at fog. It dissipates in your hand while still obscuring everything beyond it. It's time to go. So she packs up her notes and tucks them in a side satchel before slinging it over her shoulder. Suddenly, movement behind her. She wheels on it, reaching for her blaster. It's the droid. Of course it is. It wouldn't be anyone else. And yet, well, she has to excuse her own shock. I'm tired and angry. The droid buzzes.
An image crystal.
It extends a telescoping arm. In it, a small smoke-gray crystal. The Empire doesn't use these anymore, as they're somewhat antiquated. But decades before, single-serving image crystals were still in use. Now the Empire has the ability to archive visual and textual information across cartridges or data cards. She's about to hand it back. What could one image matter? Still, the reader is right here. She unslings the bag and, without sitting, places the crystal in the smooth portal on the alcove desk, then hits the button beneath it so it lights up. a three-dimensional image emerges in the space before her. It looks like somewhere in an Imperial docking bay. In the background, a Lambda-class shuttle sits. At the margins of the hollow, white-armored stormtroopers and a pair of red-armored Imperial Royal Guardsmen. There, in the middle of the photo, Wolf Yularen, Dodd Rancet, Terranald Screed, plus three others. Grand Vizier Mos Amida, Emperor Palpatine, and a boy. Or rather, a boy on the cusp of being a young man. The boy looks like a dirt-cheeked rube, shoved into an ill-fitting academy uniform. His hair is dark, his skin is pale. Those eyes, though, a familiar arrogance shines there, each a black hole swallowing the light. One thing stands out. One of the boy's hands is facing outward, and Sloane sees something across his palm. A marking of some kind. A tattoo? Or a brand? This holographic image by itself does nothing to illuminate who Rax is. And yet it stirs in her a strange kind of hope. In this act of excavation, she has found a rather curious fossil, hasn't she? If this is him, if this is Gallius Rax, then the mystery of his presence becomes one she can solve. He becomes a beast she can kill. Not literally, of course. Or so she hopes. What next, then, for this mystery? She has a bit of thread in her hands. How shall she pull it? Four of the men in the image glowing before her are dead. Palpatine is gone. Yularen died on the Death Star. Rancet perished in a rebel attack. Though she's heard rumors that Vader executed him for treason. And Screed was killed by pirates off the Iktari Circle. Which leaves one left alive. It is time, she thinks, to pay Mos Amida a visit.